Hi, Stuart here. This is the second part of our interview with Dr. Carol Mundell of Liverpool John Moores University. For the first part, go to the Jodcast website at www.jodcast.net.
Physicists and astronomers like taking things to the extreme because that's when our current understanding of physics and astronomy can break down, leading us to develop and improve our understanding of nature. This Jodcast interview is all about extreme physics.
What I'm talking about is the kind of conditions that you don't easily reproduce in a laboratory.
Dr. Carol Mundell, Principal Lecturer at Liverpool John Moores University, Royal Society University Research Fellow and RC UK Academic Fellow.
So the two particular kinds of objects in the universe that I'm interested in are gamma ray bursts and active galactic nuclei. And the two things that they appear to have in common is that they're driven by black holes. In the case of gamma ray bursts, these are black holes that are about the mass of our sun, but concentrated into probably an area, a volume about, 1 mile across. Mm-hmm. Supermassive black holes are at the centres of most bulge-dominated galaxies, including our own galaxy, the Milky Way, has a smallish black hole, 10 million solar masses at the centre of our own black hole.
That's a small black hole, it sounds awfully large to me. But
it's small by AGN standards. I mean, if you look at the most luminous active galactic nuclei in the universe, quasars, they're kind of 10 to the 9 solar masses, and they're the largest mass black holes. But of course, in the local universe, we do have these smaller black holes sitting at the centres of spiral galaxies. And the question that really interests me is, why do some galaxies have this activity at their centres where they have the material that's being heated up and spewed out by these black hole-driven central engines, when other galaxies lie in quiescence and just go on about their business without even seeming to know that they have a black hole at their centre? And this really goes to the heart of how galaxies are formed and how they grow through cosmic history. Because in the early universe, when the universe was much more violent, galaxies were crashing together, but galaxies were being created, black holes were being formed and grown, then you see most of the really beefy active galactic nuclei, the so-called quasars, that's where they were most active. And then the universe started to calm down and become a much more gentler place to live in. And now we have very well-established galaxies like the Milky Way, spiral galaxies that have nice gas disks and nice stellar bulges. They have black holes at their centres, but obviously they're not spewing out these massive jets of plasma. And in fact, quasars outshine the whole of their host galaxies. Whereas in the local universe, the less luminous active galactic nuclei, such as Seyfert galaxies, you will see a bright central point source, but it doesn't dominate the starlight of the galaxy. So the big question is, what triggers and fuels these black holes into this period of activity, or if you like, cosmic indigestion? And that's something that scientists have not really got to grips with, although the discovery of quasars happened back in the 1960s. And we understand an awful lot about the physics of these objects, but we still don't know what actually turns a black hole on. Hmm. And this is something that I've been involved in working with a number of colleagues and postgraduate students, looking at how the gas and the stars move close as you get closer towards the centre of the galaxy, and trying to understand if the host galaxy itself is responsible in some ways as to how it feeds and causes its black hole not to digest its food, if you like.
This sounds a silly question, but how does a black hole emit anything? How are these black holes at the centre of our galaxy spewing out these jets of plasma?
Well, of course, the material, any material that goes over the event horizon of a black hole is lost in terms of any information. Anything that goes beyond a black hole event horizon can no longer be recovered by an observer outside of that environment. But what we think is happening at the centres of these active galaxies is, as the material falls down towards the black hole, it has angular momentum and it forms an accretion disk. So a very hot X-ray emitting disk of plasma at the centres of these objects. And a little bit of the material may leak over the event horizon, but most of it has too much angular momentum to be able to fall directly into the black hole. And this is what I alluded to earlier on when I said they are not actually great cosmic vacuum cleaners. They don't go around sucking up their host galaxies. And if you have angular momentum or spin energy, you can't just fall straight down the plug hole. In the same way that you see bath water, it doesn't go straight down the plug hole. It has to orbit around the plug hole before it loses its angular momentum and falls in. So the big question really is how you can get some material to lose enough angular momentum to get down towards these accretion disks, to then be heated up with the viscous forces or frictional forces within the disks that then light up as X-ray and ultraviolet emitters. And also then, again, scientists don't know the details of these theories, but if you have strong magnetic fields, you then potentially are able to launch these jets of plasma. away from the black hole. So the material never actually goes into the black hole. It's already spewed out before it gets there.
Right. So the magnetic fields or whatever is driving these jets pulls the material off the accretion disk and spits it out.
Yeah, or maybe even a hot corona above the accretion disk, but certainly in the vicinity of the accretion disk.
So what do we learn from our observations of AGN? How do we observe these AGN objects? In what wavelength?
Well, again, AGN are very much like gamma ray bursts. They emit across the entire electromagnetic spectrum. And so to get a complete view of the physics of these objects, one has to look from gamma rays right through to the radio regime. And of course, the beauty of looking at AGN, the luxury that we don't have for gamma ray bursts, is that we're actually able to make spatially resolved images, both of the host galaxy environment and also the material that's being spewed out. The radio has been seminal, really, as a wavelength regime, in particular interferometers like Merlin and the VLA, back in the 1970s, when quasars had first been discovered and radio galaxies were starting to be imaged, even just by two-element interferometers, so two radio telescopes linked together, pointing at the sky. It was clear that famous objects like Cygnus A had radio plasma extending way beyond the host galaxy. Vast lobes of radio plasma were being inflated, and it was clear that in order to pump up these lobes of radio plasma, you had to have a jet that connected you right back to the black hole. So in some ways, what we observe with our telescopes is the exhaust fumes coming out from the central engine, which is the black hole-driven central engine. And in fact, it's slightly even harder than that, because all we get is the light from the exhaust fumes, and we have to use the light from the exhaust fumes to try to understand the physics of what's going on literally underneath the bonnet of the car.
How do we go from the observations in light, in whatever wavelength we use, to understanding these AGN? What are the models?
Well, some of the key pieces of information were really first disentangled for the most powerful AGN, the so-called quasars and blazars, where if you have material that is being spewed out close to the speed of light, and this material is, you're actually looking very close on to the jet, so it's almost, you're almost looking down the nozzle of the hose pipe, if you like. Not quite down the nozzle, so it's just a little bit off from your line of sight. You actually see blobs of plasma being ejected from these central engines, then they appear to be moving much faster than the speed of light. So for example, the giant elliptical galaxy that sits at the center of our own Virgo cluster has a supermassive black hole there. And if you monitor the knots that actually come out and appear to move on the sky, they appear to be moving six times the speed of light. And of course, we know from Einstein's theory of relativity that there's a universal speed limit and nothing can physically go faster than the speed of light. And you do the maths and you figure back and say, well, actually, this material must be moving so close to the speed of light, but because the nozzle of the hose pipe is being pointed close to our line of sight, we then see very, very high apparent speeds on the sky. And that was really the smoking gun that told astronomers that this material is being physically spewed out. So it's not just a light effect, it's actually bulk relativistic motion of plasma that's being spewed out from this central engine. So the light tells us, we actually look at how the light behaves in different wave bands, and we can understand whether the emission processes are, for example, synchrotron radiation, which is produced by electrons spiraling around magnetic fields and then radiating photons of light, or inverse Compton emission, where photons are actually crashing into very fast electrons and bouncing up to higher energies and then releasing their light. So we're actually able to study how the light is in different wave bands and actually understand what produces the light and how the energetics, if you like, of the electrons that are whizzing about in this plasma produce the light. And we can then work backwards from there. So we understand a few key things, both what actually produces the light, in the same way that, you know, a laser does in a laboratory. We understand the mechanism for how the electrons produce the electromagnetic radiation. And we also understand how the plasma that the electrons live in is being ejected and what kind of physical speeds are being produced. But as I say, there are still many unanswered questions as to how you actually take some plasma and accelerate it to speeds close to the speed of light. It's something that we certainly can't do on Earth.
Extreme physics indeed.
Indeed.
So from the very largest black holes to the smallest, it sounds like a fantastic field to be working in.
It's certainly very exciting.
Thank you very much for talking to us.
You're very welcome. Thank you.